Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Kimberly, I've been really looking forward to this, and I'm glad to have you on.
Thank you so much, Fred. I am really excited to talk to you and to your listeners today.
Just to get us started, tell us a little bit about your story and how you got involved in leadership and development programs.
Well, so my story is I've taken a very, very circuitous path, Fred. I'm not one of those people who took a traditional path that was straight as an arrow. My path is very, very different. I actually spent about 30 years in the theater before I ended up in training and development. So I did theater for about for many, many years, and then ended up starting my own business and starting a coaching practice, and then ended up in training and development. So it's been a very kind of crazy, turny, twisty road. And when I was in training and development early on, I was doing work around engagement, and I was in teaching a session for a Fortune 500 pharma company, and their director of training sat in on my session, and he heard me talk about my colorful theater days, and he liked my work, and he went off and he Googled me, and he found my old coaching website, and he found all of the information about things that I've done in my past, and he came in the next day, and he essentially changed my life, because he came in the next day and he said, "So, Kimberly, I've always wanted to do a leadership program that was based on theater tools." And I said, really? I have been noodling something over for years, but I've never had the opportunity to develop it. And so I got permission from my client to work directly with the pharma company. And I developed a full day experiential program for their high potential sales team. And I didn't know if it was any good because I had never, it was a very unusual corporate program. It was very non-traditional. So I had done a lot of corporate training at that point. It wasn't like anything I'd ever taught before. And I, quite frankly, Fred, I didn't know if it was any good. And so I ran an open enrollment session of this program in Dallas, Texas, and it went incredibly well, better than I could have ever imagined. And then I rolled it out for the client in Philly. It was actually in Philadelphia. And it was incredibly successful. And that was back in 2008. I can't believe that was so long ago. It was back in 2008. That was the beginning of my business on stage leadership, which actually gave birth to the work that I'm doing now, which is Brave Leadership. I wrote my book came out in 2018. And so all of the work that I'm doing is around authentic leadership, authentic influence, executive presence, communications. And I also teach now for Southern Methodist University, their Cox School of Business. I've been teaching for them for about 12 years. So it's been an incredible ride, and I absolutely love the work that I get to do. So it's a privilege to do this work.
One of the most important things in leadership is building and having influence. What are some of the practical strategies that you can describe as to how leaders can achieve a level of influence to help employees see the bigger picture or buy into a vision?
Yeah, so the most important thing to remember, Fred, is that influence is about choice, right? So if you want to influence someone, they have to actually choose it. It's very different from coercion or obligation or manipulation, right? Influence means they get a say, that they're part of it. And when you think about choice isn't necessarily a logical decision, right? Choice is a heart decision. So, you know, you can, choice is all about want. Do I want to be a part of this? Yes or no, right? And we can command a lot of things, but we cannot command whether or not someone wants to do something. That is completely up to each individual to decide for themselves. And so that's the main thing that you want to anchor yourself in is what is it I need to do to ensure that I connect to the want, to the heart of the people that I'm trying to influence. Okay, so then the next step is to ask yourself, well, what do they need from me to connect to their want. Now, when we talk about authenticity, authenticity is one of those words that gets so bandied about these days. We don't even know what it means anymore. You know, you jump on Facebook for 5 minutes and you see some meme that says, be yourself, you know, who cares what anyone thinks? Well, that's lovely. From a leadership and influence perspective, that doesn't really cut it, right? Because from a leadership and influence perspective, you kind of need people to want to be a part of what you're up to, right? You kind of need to care about how they experience you. So my favorite definition of authenticity is, are you genuine? Are you worthy of trust? Are you reliable? And are you believable? Now, this is where it gets really complicated, Fred, because who gets to decide, right? Who gets to decide if you're genuine, if you're worthy of their trust, if you're reliable and someone they can believe in? Well, not you. That's the whole thing you need to remember, right? In the framework of leadership and influence, authenticity lies in the eye of the beholder. They get to decide, do I experience you as someone who is authentic? Do I experience you as someone who is worthy of my trust that I can rely on and I can believe in, right? They get to decide, you don't. I mean, you can decide this all day long, but it's not going to help you lead or influence, right? So those are the two main things you need to think about, okay? You have to ground yourself in the fact that does this person want to be part of what I'm doing? Do they want to listen? Do they want to engage? Are they in or not? How do I know? Well, how do you gain access to that want? Well, what do they need from you to experience you as someone who is genuine, worthy of trust, reliance, and belief? Now, that's where this definition becomes one of the most powerful filters for action you can think about. Because if you just simply take nothing out of this conversation but this definition, right? Mm-hmm. You can use this definition as a means to prepare for the conversation. So you want to think about, you know, who's going to be in that room, because what someone who is a direct report, someone who reports to you, an employee who might report to you, is going to need from you to experience you as worthy of their trust is going to be very, very different than someone in the C-suite might need from you to experience you as worthy of their trust. So this shows up, this helps you really think about, okay, how do I need to prepare for this conversation so they experience me as authentic? How do I need to dress for this conversation, right? You know, you probably, if you're a female, you're not going to want to wear floral and lace when you go speak to the C-suite, because that's not in their mind going to be representative of someone who is genuine, worthy of trust, reliance, and belief from a senior executive vantage point, right? So how do you dress? What kind of language do you use? Are you someone who drops colorful expletives in your conversation or not? Well, who are you going to meet with? What do they need from you to experience you as genuine and worthy of trust, reliance, and belief? So that definition, well, if you can go in prepared, thinking through their eyes, what that really does, Fred, is it puts empathy in action. You're immediately standing in their shoes, looking through their lens, getting clear about what they need from you, and then coming in prepared to address those needs. So then you have an opportunity to connect to their want. They want to be a part of what you're doing. You have the likelihood of your ability to influence goes up exponentially.
I'm going to have a follow-up to that, but let me ask you the second question to the influence question. How can a leader influence an executive team in a situation where there may be very opinionated ideas?
Yeah, well, we're all very opinionated ideas, and we love our own ideas, right? That's the thing to remember, is that we hold on to our own ideas as if they are truth. They're not just an idea. So we go back to that definition. Okay, these people that have very strong opinionated ideas, what do they need from you to experience you as genuine, worthy of trust, reliance, and belief? And then you also look through it from, you look through it two other lenses. You want to look through what's the business case for what they're looking at versus what you're looking at. So what's the business case? Because if you can understand why the reason why they care about their idea, why they're attached to their idea from a business perspective, and also from an authenticity perspective, right? What maybe they maybe this is not a rational idea that they have, right? Maybe it's not rational. So you need to think about it from an authenticity perspective and a business case perspective. And then if you've thought through the business case for your counter idea and you're clear about what they need from you, then you're better prepared to have an open discussion about that. But if you're coming in just with your own agenda, and I think this is one of the things that's most detrimental, is we tend to walk in to situations carrying our own agenda and focused only on what we want, right? And when we do that, we're missing all of the cues that they're giving us. We're missing the opportunity to address their needs from an authenticity standpoint. We're missing a big part of the business case ourselves because we're focused only on our own agenda. So you've got to get your own agenda out of the way, put yourself in their shoes, and then and bring in the business case for you know, what's really needed. And then you can look at what are the problems to solve and how do you do that together.
Got it. So here's the question I have. You talked about authenticity and developing that. What's the time frame? And I'm going to give you a scenario. Let's say you're brand new to a company. You've been there barely 2 weeks and you have to have people look into and buy into your vision. What's the appropriate time frame for you to develop that level of trust so that the people that you're trying to get the influence over can buy into your ideas?
Yeah, so you're coming into a leadership position and they're reporting in under you. Is that right?
Right. Correct.
So, you know, I don't think there is a magic time frame. And I know as human beings, we love to say, here's the key, here's the magic time frame. But I think you really have to dig into the culture and get really curious and make sure you understand what's going on from their vantage point before you bring your vantage point in. Because if you don't really understand and you start imposing your vision on the situation, then they're not going to be able to hear you. And the truth is if they can't hear you, if they're in reaction to you taking over because you don't know what the history behind what's going on, you're not going to be able to get your vision past the front lines anyway. Nobody's going to be bought in to the vision. So the very first thing you need to do is make sure you understand. It's the whole Stephen Covey thing, you know, seek first to understand and then be understood, right? You have to first understand what's the history there, what's really going on, what do these human beings need from an authenticity standpoint from you to be able to hear your new vision, because if they can't hear you, you have no influence.
You've dealt with different types of executive leaders in your 20 years within the industry. What is the one behavior or trait that you have seen derail a lot of leaders' careers?
So I think one of the biggest things that gets in the way is, you know, one of the gifts that most people that make it into senior leadership have is they're really good at making decisions. And so they'll make a decision and they'll go. But the vast majority of senior leaders forget to help the people understand why something is being done. And if people don't understand the reason why this change is being made, the reason why they matter, the reason why this is going to matter to the business, the reason why this is going to matter to the customers, the reason why their engagement is so important. If people don't understand the why behind a decision, the why behind why something is being done, it's really hard to engage them from that heart perspective. Now let's go back to that heart perspective and look at what it costs you if you don't do that. So when you look at engagement, you look at trust, you look at loyalty, you look at energy, excitement, passion, innovation, creative thinking, all of those things are heart related. So if you do not connect to their hearts, you do not get access to any of those things. And most of us that want to get big things done, we need people who are willing to go above and beyond. We need people who are willing to say, wait a second, I see a problem and let's figure out how to solve it. I'm going to bring my creativity. We need people to put themselves out there and bring their ideas and everything they've got and engage fully to solve the problems at hand. Because if we can't have access to that, we cannot get the things done we need to get done as leaders. So being able to anchor people in the why is absolutely critical from any leadership position.
Successful leaders are good at navigating their organizations through very tough times like the ones we're going through now. And we've seen examples of this with a company like Southwest Airlines that has never had to follow any of its employees throughout its existence. Yeah. In your estimation, what is the biggest challenge facing leaders in today's society?
That is a big, hairy, scary question, Fred. I mean, that's a big hairball right now, right? I think the most important thing that leaders need to do right now is make it safe for people. And that doesn't, I mean, yes, we need to look at how do we keep it, make it safe for people from a health perspective. Yes, certainly. But I think it's safe from an emotional safety perspective, because if people don't feel like, if they feel like they're going to lose their job, they're going to have one foot in, one foot out. If they don't feel like they can trust their leaders, they're going to have one foot in and one foot out. If they don't feel like they can say what's real, they're going to have one foot in, one foot out. And we can't afford for people to have one foot in, one foot out, particularly now, because the world is hyper competitive. And now with so many businesses not having the financial health to stay, play the long game when things get really tough, that we can't afford our people to jump ship and that's not just they're going to leave their job. That means emotionally leave their job while they're in their job, right? So I think creating a sense of emotional safety for the people at work, and that means you have to really understand what's going on for them, right? You have to get really curious and not make assumptions and make it safe for them to say what's real, because if they don't tell you what's going on with them, you can't solve that problem.
Right. And just to add to that, so in today's society, one of the things that we're seeing a lot, one of the, you know, terminology that's being thrown around a lot is digital transformation. And we're seeing that happen across all industries now, where because of the pandemic, a lot of people are working from home. Do you see that having an impact on the effectiveness of leadership, where you don't have your direct reports, you know, in the same office, in the same building as you?
Yes and no. So, you know, it's interesting because a lot of companies, because of bandwidth, are now, you know, even though they're working virtually and it's one Zoom meeting after another Zoom meeting, a lot of companies, because of bandwidth, aren't using their cameras. Mm-hmm. And so I think that human connection really gets lost when you're not using your cameras, and people are also multitasking. They're not really being very present, and you know, they're not being very present. And so, because of that, yes, those relationships start to erode. Now, at the same time, when we do get a chance to connect this way via Zoom, right, and you can see people face to face, that line that used to exist between work life and home life has gotten blurred, because now you see kids, you know, their parents, their kids start walking behind them. You know, you've got people having to make dinner while they're on a conference call. You know, you've got all sorts of real life things happening in the midst of work unfolding at the same time. And that kind of blending of work and life actually creates a lot of opportunity to connect from a human perspective. And when people are connected from a human perspective, they will go above and beyond. So I think it's a positive thing and it's a negative thing. It's a really hard thing for leaders who like to micromanage, a really hard thing for leaders who have difficulty trusting their teams because they don't feel safe right now. And so a lot of times they'll start overcompensating and start over micromanaging things that itself, that behavior can erode the relationship, but it's not necessarily the digital nature. I mean, we have to pay attention to making sure that we maintain the relationships and that we stay connected on a human level, but we can do that digitally. It just takes a different kind of effort.
Here at Process IT, I deal with a lot of different types of hiring managers, from C-level all the way to lower levels. I'm curious to know from your perspective, when faced with two equally qualified candidates, how do you determine whom to hire? What are some of the things that you look for that won't jump out from a resume that you've seen help leaders make the best hiring decisions?
Yeah, I think there are three things to pay attention to. One is, what are their values? I mean, is it clear what their values are? Are their values in alignment with the organization's values? That's a really important thing. And that doesn't always show up on paper, right? That shows up in conversation. The second is, are they an initiative taker? I mean, can you find evidence, not just on their piece of paper, but also through discussion, of how they've taken their career and run with it? How are they moving themselves and not sitting back and expecting their manager to give them opportunities to move up? And the third is taking ownership of their own learning and development. So that goes back to, are they committed to growing themselves? Because if you have someone who is committed to growing themselves and takes initiative and their values are aligned with the organization, they'll develop the skills you need. Skills can be taught. All of those things are really hard to teach. So, you know, you get a resume, you can see their skills. You can see their education, but you can't see the things that are really going to make a difference on whether or not they're going to succeed and be able to lead in your organization.
What about when you're making hiring decisions over Zoom? We talked about digital transformation and the effects of the pandemic where people are not able to see some of these nonverbal cues. Do you think there's an impact or there's a risk of making a wrong hiring decision just because we're having to rely on a digital platform?
You know, I think if the cameras are on, it's not as much of a risk as you would think. Without cameras, it's really hard to know, right? Because you don't pick up on the body language. You can't tell when someone is being evasive and what, you know, when they're not, you can tell when someone's not necessarily being honest physically, right? If you're paying attention to those cues. So if the cameras are on, I don't know that there's that much of a difference as long as you're having a real honest conversation. But that comes down to the questions you're asking just as much as the medium, right? You mm-hmm. have to be asking questions that get to who is this person from a human perspective, not just what can they do, and how do you craft your questions to make sure that they feel safe enough to tell you what's real.
I come from a project management background, and one of the things that I share with friends and colleagues is that project management is a big part of our daily lives, whether people realize it or not. Yeah. What role does project management play in your profession, and what strategies do you utilize?
My whole life is project management, Fred. I think my whole life is project management. And I would love to say I'm really great at it, but I wouldn't say that's my number one strength. So I think with any big project, the important thing is to chunk it out and go, okay, what's the big picture now? What metrics do we have to do to get to the different milestones? And then you chunk it out even smaller. So you chunk it into smaller and smaller and smaller, more tangible steps, because when you're looking at the whole big thing, so for example, right now I'm in the throes of getting ready to launch my online courses. Oh my gosh, you would not imagine all that's in, I mean, and I'm not a tech person, Fred. So, you know, I mean, maybe we need to talk because that's not my strength.
Absolutely.
But I'm having, you know, to learn how to build online portals and how to handle digital marketing, which I've never done before, and how to move from a B2B space to a B2C space. And I mean, the learning is nonstop. And if I look at the whole thing as, oh, I'm launching my online course, I get shut down because it's overwhelming. So I really do have to go, okay, where am I launching? What needs to happen before then? How do I chunk this out into small, manageable pieces? And then what am I taking on right now, today? Because if I look past that, then I get overwhelmed and shut down. But really, big projects. I mean, I remember when I was writing my book, writing a book is so overwhelming because there's so much there. And I remember I thought, oh my gosh, who am I to write a book? I can't write a book. This is too hard. But it really was one paragraph at a time, one chapter at a time, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the way all big, hard things get done. It's baby steps, right? One baby step at a time. But if you look at the whole big picture all at the same time, it's going to shut you down.
Last question, and this one's going to be really interesting because you have a lot of things going on for you right now. What has helped you to get to where you are, and what word of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career that's similar to yours?
You know, so here's the thing. There was no job description that fits what I'm doing now, right? It wasn't something I could apply for ever. What I did, Fred, is I threw myself into opportunities as they presented themselves, and I continue to learn and grow and learn and grow and learn and grow, and then opportunities would present themselves. So, you know, it's that whole preparation meets opportunity. That's where big things happen. And so for me, it was the commitment to learning and growing and staying open to those opportunities and understanding what value I bring that helped me seize the opportunities. And so I don't know that there is a magic formula that people can take. But what I will say is make sure you are surrounding yourself with people who are committed to learning and growing and being better, and they are not satisfied with just okay, that they hunger to be the best that they can be. Because you know, there's going to be a lot of people who say, oh, no, you don't have to write a book. You don't have to do that hard thing. You don't have to, you know, you're doing fine. And mostly it's because their comfort zone, you're making them uncomfortable, right? It's what does that mean about them if they're not, they don't have the same big goals that you are? Well, it doesn't mean anything about them. But we can allow those relationships to make us stoppable. So the more you can surround yourself with people that are really committed to living the best expression of who they can be in the world, right? Then not only are you know you going to be energized to keep moving and growing and finding those opportunities, but you're also going to the opportunities are going to present themselves 10 times more frequently because they're paying attention to who's out there doing the exact same thing. So a big part of it is networking. Don't wait until you need something to start creating those relationships. One of the things that served me really well when I did my book launch is, you know, people say, well, how'd you get such great PR? Well, it's not because I hired a PR agency. You know, I did, but they didn't really deliver on what I needed. What it was is I had developed relationships 3 years before my book ever came out, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years before my book ever came out, that when my book came out, we were friends, right? We had real close relationships. And it wasn't because I needed something from them. It's because we were invested in each other. So I was equally invested in their work. And so when my work came out, they were invested in mine. But it wasn't, I wasn't just looking to take advantage of people. You know, I wasn't just looking, how can I use these people? It was, how can I invest in people that I think are really amazing in the world? And oh, by the way, the law of reciprocity kicks back in and they want to invest in you as well. So really, really develop a network of people that you surround yourself that are amazing and are doing amazing things in the world, and grow yourself to be worthy of that network. And it will put you on the path to what is right for you. You know, it may not put you on the path that I'm on, because my path is kind of a customized Kimberly path, right? But right. It should be the custom path that's right for you. And if you're surrounding yourself with the right people, you're growing yourself, you will find that path.
That is wonderful advice, Kimberly. It's been great having you. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Thanks, Fred. This is great. I so appreciate you having me on.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.